It is a great pleasure to welcome to Best Ideas 2022, Mordechai Yavne, founder and manager of New York-based Focus Capital Management, LLC, a boutique long-only hedge fund launched in 2013. Focus Capital Management is a fund with a fairly unique approach to investing. The unique advantage comes from implementing and capitalizing on the value that concentration brings to an investor's portfolio. Mordechai believes that focusing his time, energy, research, analysis, and resources on his best ideas generates superior long-term returns with a reduced level of risk built into each investment. He aims to invest in 4 to 5 positions at a time, and believes this concentration and the deep research in each of those positions is the driver behind the long-term success of Focus Capital Management. Mordechai, always a great pleasure to have you with us. I look forward to your presentation today. Please go ahead.
Thank you, John. Thank you, John, for having me. This is my second time presenting. I really enjoyed presenting last year on Burford Capital, and I'm eager and excited to share about Silicon Motion today. I'll just start off a little bit, talking a little bit about Focus Capital Management. As John Ray said, we're very into focusing and concentrating our time, energy, and resources on just a few opportunities, 4 to 5 positions at a time. So when I present on a company, you can know that I'm really putting my money where my mouth is. We believe this focus has many benefits. Among them, we believe our focus allows us to do deep research and analysis, really understand everything about the company we're investing in. If you have 100 positions, you can, if you don't eat or sleep, you can devote 3.5 days a year to each. If you have 4 positions, you can really get into the guts of the company, the industry, the competitors, and really understand it very well. We also believe our focus drives higher returns because we only pick our best ideas. We want to pick our best ideas and not dilute them with ideas that are mediocre or even good. We want only the best. And we actually believe that focusing on only a few positions, that our focus reduces risk by allowing us to thoroughly vet and stress test every investment. And we think that's the way to go. And that's what we do. Today's presentation is about Silicon Motion. It's a Taiwanese company, trades on the NASDAQ with ADR. And they are the leading merchant supplier of NAND flash controllers, which we're going to explain what that means in just a moment. And we believe that this is an amazing situation, high growth, very high growth, profitable, and cheap, something that you don't usually find all combined together. This is an outline of our presentation. We'll start off with the elevator pitch, so to speak, and then walk through the background of the industry and Silicon Motion. And what makes this is such a special opportunity. So the short 1 minute elevator speak pitch. Silicon Motion is highly profitable. They've always been highly profitable in good times and in worse times. They continue to constantly be showing good margins and adding cash to the balance sheet. They're undergoing extreme growth. They had approximately 70% growth in 2021. That's after a near record break in 2020. And they should have at least 30 to 40% growth next year in 2022 and more growth in years to come. They are active in a secular growth market, one that's been growing for years and will continue to grow for years. And they are gaining share within the market. So they are growing share within a growing market, which is always lovely to see. Their competition is actually exiting the market, ceding the market to them long-term. They have a fortress balance sheet, no debt, 14% of the market cap in cash. Often you have these growth companies and you wonder if they're so profitable and so growing, why isn't there more cash in the balance sheet? Somehow there's always going to be next year they're going to start bringing the money, but it's not here yet. But this is not the situation with Silicon Motion. The cash is just loading up on the balance sheet. They would actually have much more, except that they have been returning cash to the shareholders via dividends and buybacks. And even so, the cash is piling up. And to top it all off, they have an ultra cheap valuation, a P of only 17. If you X the cash, a P of only 15 for a company that's growing 70%, 30 to 40% plus, and has years of growth ahead of them, and is actually having reduced risk as competition is diminishing, is really just unheard of. So what are NAND flash controllers? What is NAND flash? What is a NAND flash controller? So basically NAND flash is the memory that you find inside most computing devices nowadays, but not the memory that, not the RAM that is used for computing, but the memory that's used for storage in place of hard disks. So on smartphones, tablets, most modern computers, data centers, and increasingly ubiquitous in all sorts of devices, you have NAND flash serving for the storage. Wherever you have NAND flash, you have a NAND flash controller. The NAND flash controller is a chip that manages the NAND flash, optimized performance, and does all sorts of different technical things to allow efficient reading and writing, and different features depending on what the manufacturer is looking for, optimization for specific use cases. Maybe you want something to focus more on writing, more on reading, more on having higher buffers, or whatever it is. An important thing to understand about NAND flash is every generation of NAND flash is getting denser and more sophisticated, going from single level cell to multi-level cell to triple level cell to quad level cell to 3D NAND piled up one on top of the other. And as each one gets more sophisticated and also smaller geometries in the nanometers that the NAND flash is being manufactured at, it makes the NAND flash cheaper, which makes it more attractive to buyers, but it also makes the NAND flash weaker. So as the NAND flash gets more sophisticated, it needs a more sophisticated NAND flash controller to keep up with it. This is an overview of the basic NAND flash market. You have the seven basic makers of NAND flash. You have the South Korean companies, Samsung and SK Hynix. You have the American makers, Intel, Micron, and Western Digital. Intel actually was recently, is just recently going through a buyout process from SK Hynix, which is the first stage just closed a few days ago. And then it's going to second part of the process is going to close in 2025. Maybe we'll talk about that a little later. Then Kioxia, which is the former Toshiba from Japan. And the bottom one, YMTC, is a new player from China. The Chinese invested a lot of money into developing their own homegrown NAND flash manufacturer. So those are the seven makers of NAND flash. They either are selling the NAND flash themselves directly to end customers, or they are selling it through module makers. If you look on the side here, I have the market segmentation for Silicon Motion. Silicon Motion selling the controller. Either selling the controller to the flash manufacturers themselves and when they're selling a finished product, a flash plus controller, or they're selling to module makers, which are other companies, some of them quite big like Kingston or other companies that you might have heard of, Kingston, ADATA, Patriot, et cetera, or whatever it is. They're buying flash and they're taking the controller and putting it together and selling it on. Some of them are quite large. Some of them often are more opportunistic, smaller, don't have the same stickiness as NAND flash goes up in price. They kind of withdraw from the market. They come back in when NAND flash is cheaper. The NAS are reliable. And then you have OEM programs, which are the major companies like Dell, Lenovo, Acer, or Apple, or whatever it is. So they're sourcing a more long-term contracts for their memory needs with controllers. So those are more long-term programs. The product splits into a number of different types of controllers. You have the eMMC and UFS controllers. That's more for mobile and Internet of Things. You have client SSDs, which is the hard drives that you are familiar with in computers and data centers. Enterprise SSDs is going to be more common in the larger and the higher end data centers. And then there's legacy removable storage, which is really a small and diminishing part of the business, which is like USB keys and SD cards and that type of thing. And as you see here at the outer end of the circle, this is all the different markets that the NAND flash and hence NAND flash controllers are used. And the thing to notice is that these are all growing markets: mobile, automotive, Internet of Things, SSDs, PCs. Either the market itself is growing or the NAND flash segment of the market is growing. And PCs, maybe PCs themselves are not growing so much, but NAND is increasingly becoming the standard SSDs are increasingly displacing hard disks in computers and in data centers. Automotive is adding more and more telematics and infotainment and assisted driving that all needs flash and hence all needs flash controls. Silicon Motion is benefiting from this double growth. They're growing their share in a growing market. And the crucial thing to notice is that although NAND flash goes famously through booms and busts of price, Silicon Motion is dependent more on the unit growth of the NAND flash, not on the price, and they can benefit from decline in NAND flash pricing. When it declines in an orderly fashion and it causes NAND flash to grow in use, that actually is benefits Silicon Motion, whose controllers are then more needed. And they have a number of divisions. These are the basic divisions of Silicon Motion. We have the eMMC plus UFS, that's embedded memory that's going into mobile and Internet of Things. Internet of Things is increasingly a growth area, set-top boxes, smart TVs, home security, anything and everything, connected toasters, whatnot. So they have some flash and they need a and they need a controller. And then you have client SSDs, which is what you think of as the displacement of hard drives, so PCs, game consoles, external drives, et cetera. That's about 50% of the revenue. And then SSD solutions is integrated SSDs. That's where they buy flash from the flash manufacturers, add a controller and sell that on. So over there, they are somewhat exposed to the price of flash and in their inventory, where they're not just selling the controller, they're selling the whole solution. So there, if the price of flash declines rapidly, that could hurt them. And that has happened in the past. They are in the middle of switching to a consignment model for a good chunk of their business, in which case the NAND flash price is just passed on to the customer and they're just making money on the controller, which is really their the bread and butter of their business. And then there's legacy, which is 3% and about 3% and going down of the business. So here's the meat of it. This is the financials of Silicon Motion. You see here long-term growth, but you see really the growth in 2021, which is really quite impressive, about 70% growth in 2021 over 2020, which itself was a growth year for 2019, almost a record-breaking year. What I want to point out here is you see from 2016 to 2019, you see here a decline in revenue for a few years. And that decline was from two major sources. One source is they had a major customer, SK Hynix, was one of their major customers for eMMC. And in the transition in mobile smartphones from eMMC to UFS, SK Hynix did not choose to use Silicon Motion's UFS solution. That hurt the stock very badly when they saw that they were losing such a major customer for UFS, which is a successor, as I said, to eMMC for the mobile market. It hurt the stock a lot, but if you notice, the revenue is really not down as much as you would expect. And the reason is because they really replaced the UFS customer. Instead of selling UFS to SK Hynix in replace of eMMC, they started selling to Micron, who actually did very well in the market with Silicon Motion's solution, UFS solution. And they've been adding since, in 2020, 2021, and next year as well, they've been adding more UFS customers as well. So although the market was very concerned about their possibility and then the actual event of their losing SK Hynix as a customer, I think it was mostly not so essential to the company. As you see, they made it up in other places. Part of the decline from 2016 to 2019 is the Shannon business, which is their integrated SSDs for Chinese hyperscalers, which did not quite meet snuff, and they had these issues with having write-downs of inventory and execution on their enterprise SSD, which is not a major part of the business, at least not then and certainly not now, although they do hope to break into it in the future. But since then, they've really been firing on all cylinders, basically all their divisions, eMMC, UFS, client SSD, all growing sharply. 90% of the company have been growing from 2019 to 2020, 2021 to 2022 to beyond. And one of the things I want to point out on this chart, which I think is very important, as you see how stable the gross margin is. It's about 48 to 51, 50, throughout the years, even when the revenue was declined from 2016 to 2019, that did not hurt their gross margin. And it did not hurt their operating margin so much. It went down a little because of loss of leverage, but not so much. I want to point the operating income here is adjusted. The adjustments are for one-time write-downs on the Shannon business, which are not going to recur because they wrote down that business entirely, even if it may eventually turn into another pillar for the company, but they've written that down. And that's what this chart reflects, is not counting that those write-downs. Even if you do count those write-downs, they still had a very respectable operating margin, even at the trough, profitable throughout, even in tough times, which I think is a very important part of a resilient company. And the last thing I'd want to show here on the chart is you see from 2019 to 2021, we have the operating margin going from about 18% to 20 to 27. That's with the tremendous growth of the revenue, we are seeing the operating leverage kick in and the operating margin going up. And we actually expect it to continue to go up next year as growth continues. We expect it to hit 30% and maybe even beyond, which is their long-term target. Here's a little bit of evolution of their guidance starting from the beginning of the year till now. In February 2021, when they announced their 2020 earnings, they gave guidance, the full multi-year plan, the three-year plan to reach $1 billion in sales in 2023, 3 years out, with 50% gross margin and 30% operating margin. Now, that plan was close to double 2020 revenue, and they were projecting net income to be growing faster because they were expecting operating margin to grow in just 3 years. So we're talking about close to double 2020 revenue and close to triple 2020 profits in just 3 years. And this guidance was excluding any new customers and excluding any enterprise SSD initiative, just the projects that were ready in the pipeline. That is not actually what happened, though. What actually happened is that they grew much, much faster than even their own expectations, which were quite aggressive. In May 2021, after the first quarter, they said that they expect to reach the $1 billion revenue goal sooner than 2023. In other words, they expect to reach it in 2022. And they actually said that they would really reach it in 2021 if not for tight foundry capacity. As everyone knows, there's a major chip shortage underway as we speak. And then in July 2021, after the second quarter, they said they actually expect to reach a $1 billion revenue run rate already by the fourth quarter of this year. And they said that for sure in 2022, they expect to exceed $1 billion because they expect to have more foundry capacity next year than this year. And they actually have an order book for 2022 in excess of $1.5 billion and growing, although they expect the chip shortage to last through 2022 as well. So even though they're still gated by foundry capacity, they still are confident to grow the 2022 revenue by a decent amount. And then finally, the last, after third quarter earnings in October, the end of October, they actually achieved their $1 billion revenue run rate a quarter earlier, in quarter three instead of quarter four. And they were able to successfully tilt the mix to the higher revenue products, even without gaining extra foundry capacity mid-year. And the 2022 order book is indeed well in excess of $1.5 billion. They don't expect to fill their entire order book, but they do expect to be able to get close to 50% increase, even though they don't expect a 50% increase in foundry capacity, but between extra foundry capacity and newer technologies being higher revenue, such as PCIe Generation 4 and UFS 3.1, they do expect to get, they didn't actually give formal guidance in 2022 yet, but they indicated that they expect to be somewhere in the 50% range, and I at least am modeling a minimum of 30 to 40% growth for next year. One of the major themes of why this is such a great opportunity is the fact that the competition is actually diminishing. So let's speak about that and really get into it. What competitors do they have? They have two major categories of competitors. They have the internal controller teams. Each of the NAND flash manufacturers have their own controller team They need to have a control team to be able to develop their own Flash. They have to be able to use their own Flash in the development process and understand their Flash. And when they sell on to customers, they have the high end. They almost always have a high end internal control team. Historically, this has been the main threat and fear that people have been afraid that the Flash customers, why should they buy the controllers from Silicon Motion or other merchant controller companies that make controllers even though they don't make Flash, when they can just make it themselves. That has been historically the main threat and fear, and that's been substantially diminished, as we'll speak about in a moment. And the other category of competitors is other companies like Silicon Motion that are merchant controller companies that sell on controllers just by themselves. People buy Flash from the Flash manufacturers, buy controllers from the merchant controller companies, and combine them. The major ones would be Phison, which is also a Taiwanese company. similar in size to Silicon Motion, smaller, but similar in size. And they've historically had close ties to Toshiba and to Kingston. Kingston actually was a major shareholder of Phison and exclusively used Phison controllers, but that's been changing recently, as we'll talk about as well. Another merchant control company would be Marvell. They have actually exited the client SSDs where Silicon Motion is major in. Basically, they lost out to Silicon Motion, and Marvell pivoted towards enterprise SSDs, and that's where they're playing now mostly. And then there's a bunch of small players, which are really not so important. They're just here for the sake of being comprehensive. Realtek, Maxiotek, a bunch of other small companies that don't really break into the market. So what happened in 2021? So I think most people are probably listening are probably aware that 2021 had a major chip shortage throughout the chip industry. It was hard to get capacity. TSMC, who is the major foundry chip maker, they make more than half of all foundry chips in the world. A foundry is when you make chips for another company. So TSMC is the major foundry of the world. They are the foundry that makes Silicon Motion parts. They understand that Silicon Motion controls are crucial to the ecosystem, because without the controllers, then there's very few computing devices that can get off the ground. So they did give extra access to Silicon Motion because of how important they are to the ecosystem. And a lot of the major customers of TSMC, who are major customers of TSMC and major customers of Silicon Motion, thinking Dell, HP, Lenovo, et cetera, they're going to bat for Silicon Motion with TSMC to get them capacity. Even so, there is a major chip shortage, and they still cannot secure enough wafer supply to match demand. That's no question. And you would think that because of the major chip shortage, that would affect revenue. But despite the lack of adequate supply to meet demand, they still increased the revenue in 2021 by 70%. That's during a chip shortage. In addition, because of the chip shortage, suppliers raised prices. TSMC raised prices, packaging assembly, substrate, all these raised prices on Silicon Motion. And yet the prices that they give on to the customers are mostly contractual and actually have volume discounts. So there's somewhat of a squeeze here. Their suppliers, Silicon Motion suppliers, are raising prices, and to their customers, they can't really raise prices during the contract period at least, and maybe even have to give them discounts or value. So you would be forgiven if you believe that would be hurting their gross margins. But factually, despite the temporary price squeeze, gross margins were stable and operating margins even expanded by 35% as they moved over the year from 20% operating margins to 27% operating margins due to the increased volume and due to their being able to efficiently keep costs down as much as they were able to in different levers they have to pull, and by tilting the mix to higher revenue and higher margin products. But that's without increasing prices. I would point out, for example, that Phison had much harder time. Phison is the competitor of Silicon Motion that we mentioned previously. They had similar revenue in 2021 to 2020, but that was not because that was actually lower volume and they raised their prices. They were not able to secure manufacturing capacity as much as Silicon Motion, and they therefore raise prices on the customers to make up for the Silicon Motion, is doing the long-term good thing with their customers and not raising prices. In fact, they tend to have longer-term contracts, so they can't raise prices for 1 to 2 to 3 years as is. And they're seeing that through, but instead we're able to secure much more manufacturing capacity and really gain share in the market, which is, I think, longer-term much more important. The next thing that happened in 2021 is in February, there was an ice storm in Texas. And that Texas was not prepared for the ice storm. Samsung's Austin fab, which is the main fab factory for controllers, was shut down for more than a month. And Samsung, when it finally was able to reopen it, decided to exit the eMMC controller market, which basically, and is very important, leaves Silicon Motion as essentially the only significant supplier of eMMC controllers, a long-tailed market, which is still growing significantly due to low-end smartphones and Internet of Things. Samsung decided to exit the eMMC controller market because for them, it's lower margin than the other opportunities in manufacturing of chips. But in terms of Silicon Motion, that doesn't mean that there's not a high value market. It's low-end smartphones, but low-end smartphones are still quite a growth market. And Internet of Things, which is also low-end, but is growing rapidly in unit value. So for Samsung exiting and leaving old Silicon Motion is really very good news for Silicon Motion. Basically, they've been capturing more slop due to scale. They're capturing sticky business because these customer roadmaps extend out years. And when they win the slop, they're not winning the slop just for now during the chip shortage. They're winning it out for next year and the next design win and the next design win out. And they've actually significantly increased their presence in OEM programs. Historically, they've had about 70% of the module maker market, which is not as sticky, and only about 25% in the OEM programs. But over 2021, they moved from 25 to 30 to 40% in OEM, and next year they actually have 50% of design wins in the OEM programs. These are higher value, higher volume, and stickier business, and they're increasing the market share while retaining the market share among module makers is very, very positive. And I want to stress, and I don't think I can emphasize this, cannot emphasize this too much. This is not a temporary movement of market share, which is going to reverse after the chip shortage. This is a permanent step up in revenue and margins. It's unlikely to reverse the share gains. You know, again, sticky business, multi-year contracts, multi-year design game plans and roadmaps. They're unlikely to reverse the share gains, and there's more growth to come. And you know, a lot of companies that grew during the pandemic, a lot of them were growing the end market. And the question is, when the pandemic is over and life returns to normal, which will eventually happen, whether their end market will revert and decrease more. You know, maybe people are using Zoom a lot during the pandemic, but after the pandemic, they don't use Zoom as much. Maybe people are using Peloton more during the pandemic, or maybe after the pandemic, they'll go back to gyms or whatever. That's not the case here. This wasn't an issue of their growth in 2021 and their growth next year is not from end user market increases much at all. Most of the growth is actually from market share gain, which is, as I said, sticky and going to stick and continue in years to come. I'm just going through the three major businesses, eMMC, UFS, and client SSD, which, as we said before, make up 90% of the business. eMMC, Samsung exited the market, at least Silicon Motion is basically the only major game in town. They're the exclusive supplier for SK Hynix's eMMC division, and they supply a slew of Chinese module makers to eMMC, who have been selling eMMC throughout the chain, low-end smartphones, Internet of Things, and Internet of Things is really a surprisingly long-tailed growth market in just so many devices out there. As I said, set-top boxes, smart TVs, connected toasters, home security, whatever it is, it's going to have some flash and use a flash controller, and that's going to be using eMMC, which, as we said, basically Silicon Motion is almost a monopoly in the area at the moment. UFS is what's been used originally at the flagship mobile devices, smartphones and tablets, and now it's been going more to mainstream. Definitely a major growth area. They lost the SK Hynix business in 2018 and 2019, but they did extremely well as an exclusive supplier to Micron's UFS business. But not only that, in 2021, they added a second UFS customer, and they're adding more in next year as well. So they've been adding customers in the UFS division as well. So that's basically also growth that's baked in. And the client SSD, they, as we said before, they supply about 70% of the module maker merchant controller needs. Historically, they only had about 30% of OEM contracts, but they've been increasing their share. PCIe Gen 3, they only had 25-30%. And this year, in the first iteration of PCIe Gen 4, they had 40%. And next year, they expect to have 50%. They have growth both from customers gaining share in the market and from adding new customers. For example, in 2020, they had one NAND flash customer for PCIe, and they moved to two for the first iteration of PCIe Gen 4 in 2021. And as you see here, there's more growth in the bag, more growth in the bag for years to come. As we said, they're basically all gaming EMMC. IoT is long tail and growing market. So basically they're gonna have EMMC growing next year and the year after. Just to show you, to illustrate the difference between Samsung's exit in the first two quarters of 2021, Silicon Motion's EMMC and UFS division, which they combined in reporting, grew about 50%, very nice growth year over year. In the third quarter of 2021, they haven't yet released fourth quarter results, but in the third quarter, they actually quadrupled their EMMC plus UFS division. And much of that is almost certainly due to Samsung's exit from the EMMC market, which leaves the market to them. And that's only in one quarter in 2021, the last two quarters of 2021. In 2022, we'll have that for the whole year. And as I said, EMMC, despite being legacy technology, is a growing market. UFS, they went from one customer in 2020 to two customers in 2021. Well, next year they're going to seven, which basically guarantees future growth for the UFS segment. And UFS itself is a growing market as it moves from flagship smartphones to mainstream. Client SSDs, we said they went from 30% design wins to 40% of design wins in 2021. In 2022, they have 50% of design wins by their estimation. They're going from two NAND flash customers in 2021 to eight in 2022, adding customers. And that's the main, you know, the first three here are the bread and butter of the business, 90% of the business. But the other parts of the business also definitely have the potential to bring in real growth. Ferry is the industrial and auto integrated SSDs that they sell. The auto industry is adding a lot of content that needs NAND flash and controllers, infotainment, telematics, assisted driving. Enterprise SSDs is not in their guidance at all, but they do expect to begin start selling some in 2022 and really start contributing in 2023. It's a greenfield opportunity for them. It's to be competing against Marvell, but they successfully competing against them in the client SSD space. So I expect that they can very likely break into enterprise space as well, and that would be icing on the top to their growth that they have from the present business. Shannon never really reached its potential in the Chinese hyperscale market, but we see it as a free option that maybe they will break into that market. Alibaba, Baidu are customers of theirs in this market. If they break in a major way, then that's really, again, icing on the cake to the growth that's already baked in from their bread and butter EMMC, UFS, and client SSDs. Competitors have exited the market. Let's just talk about a few of them. Marvell, they used to compete with them on client SSDs. They were unsuccessful in competing in the client SSD space. And instead, they pivoted to focus on enterprise SSDs in 2018, basically ceding the client SSD space to Silicon Motion. Marvell still has a few products in that area, but they're basically not being successful in the market and not focusing there at all. Kingston used to exclusively use Pfizer controllers. They were a major shareholder of Pfizer controllers. They began using Silicon Motion controllers in 2019, ramped up to 2020 and 2021, and they're continuing to gain significant share with future design wins with Kingston. I think this actually says quite a lot that Kingston had their own relationship and shareholding joint venture with Phison, and even so, they began using Silicon Motion controllers. I think that is a very strong endorsement of Silicon Motion technology and what they have to offer. Kingston is a module maker. They don't make their own flash, but they're actually probably almost as important as an OEM program. They're 10% of the market, and they're very major. Kingston is not a regular module maker that's more opportunistic. They're a major, basically an OEM program of their own with, again, multi-contract, multi-year sticky contracts, which Silicon Motion has been significantly ramping up their share in. Samsung, we already said, is exiting the eMMC controller market. With the chip shortage going on, I would not be surprised if Samsung decides to exit the client SSD space as well. There have been possible rumors of that. If they start to begin to outsource client SSDs as well, Samsung is only one of the NAND flash manufacturers that exclusively uses their own controllers for SSDs. So if they start outsourcing that to merchant controllers, that is very major news if that happens, because Samsung itself is about 30% of the SSD market. And if they start outsourcing that, then that opens up a whole new avenue of growth to Silicon Motion. It might happen, might not happen. There's what to be said that Samsung can focus their chip manufacturing efforts on higher margin products than controllers, given the chip shortage, but we'll see what happens. And finally, the major risk has always been internal controller teams, such as Samsung. But what we see actually is that increasingly they're outsourcing controllers to Silicon Motion. Silicon Motion is gaining more and more customers for UFS, for client SSD, SK Hynix, which left Silicon Motion when UFS took over eMMC for the smartphone market, has recently come back to Silicon Motion for client SSDs. We see that more and more in the flash manufacturers are outsourcing more and more instead of insourcing. And it really makes a lot of sense. The controller is only a small portion of the overall flash costs. It makes sense to leave it to specialists and focus on the flash manufacturing, which is really where their business is. Merchant suppliers have the advantage that they can spread development costs of controllers over greater volume than captive teams because they can work with all the different flash manufacturers at once, while captive teams can only work for the flash manufacturer that they are they're part of. This is the main long-term risk, and it's substantially reduced as we see more and more flash manufacturers coming towards Silicon Motion instead of away. In short, I think we could sum it up. In much of the market, the flash controller wars are over and Silicon Motion has won. And that basically sums up the situation of the competition, which is extremely important. Of course, after everything said and done, we have to talk about valuation. Valuation is, of course, very important. So what's valuation? As of December 31st, which is, we're now talking the beginning of January, so this is yesterday's close, Friday's close. So the price is $95.03, the market cap of approximately $3.3 billion. I estimate net income, which is for 2021, which is three quarters under the belt, and the fourth quarter they reiterated their guidance for just about a month ago. So this should be a pretty accurate estimate of about 193 million net income. That comes out to a PE of just above 17 for a highly growing company. Cash is about 450 million, 14% of the market cap. It would actually be more if it wasn't for all the dividends and stock buybacks that they've been announcing. Zero debt. So PE, if you don't count the cash, would be just under 15. In October, at the end of October, they raised their dividend by 43%, which is certainly a sign of strength. And most recently, they announced a share buyback of 20 million, which apparently was taken and they reiterated guidance at the same time, and that was taken very positively by the market, which is actually what brought the recent growth spurt in the price. I would just say, I've been pounding the table on this situation since the stock was about $60, $70 just a few months ago. And since then, it's been up more than 50%. Back then, we were looking at a PE of under 12, or under about 10 when you were talking ex cash. So it was really crazy, crazy undervalued. Now, it's not as crazy undervalued, but it's still very much a pound the table sort of situation where you have high growth, highly profitable, and cheap valuation all at the same time. And I don't think you usually find this. So basically the thesis is simple. The thesis is we have extreme growth, 70% revenue growth in 2021, 30 to 40% plus revenue growth for 2022, more years of growth after that to come. And of course, net income is going to grow even faster than revenue because of operating leverage. That's pillar number one. Pillar number two is they're highly profitable, both better times and tougher times. Gross margins hold steady, even with increased volume discounts that they have to give with extra volume, and even though there's a temporary pricing squeeze, it's only temporary because when they renegotiate contracts for 2 years out, they're going to take their supplier increases as going to be passed on to their customers as well. Even so, even now, when they have their supplier increases and are not able to raise prices on the customers, they're still keeping the gross margin steady with the various levers that we spoke about earlier. Operating margins are expanding significantly with increased volumes, and we expect the operating margin to approach and possibly even exceed 30% in 2022 and beyond. And the third pillar is looking at highly reduced risk. The main risk was always the internal captive controller teams freezing them out of the market. That risk has proven unfounded as more and more NAND flash manufacturers and OEM programs turn specifically to virtual controllers and Silicon Motion to fulfill their needs. And that sticky long-term roadmaps, they see design wins out for years, multi-year customer roadmaps, de-risk future growth, as Silicon Motion has good visibility into design wins. They don't necessarily know volume until it actually happens, because that depends on the end markets, but they do see which design wins they are being entered into. In short, I challenge you to find such a combination of high growth and high profitability with low risk at a PE of just 17 or a PE ex cash of just 15. I do not think you will find such an opportunity just about anywhere in the market at such low risk. And so that's basically what I have to say about Silicon Motion. Any questions?
Wonderful. Thank you so much, Mordechai. Really appreciate your thesis here. Maybe we could just start with a little bit of background on your own involvement with this investment. I believe you had it for some time. Could you just tell us how you found the idea and since when you've actually owned it?
Right. So that's an interesting question. I've actually been involved in Silicon Motion for years. We've been invested since 2014 when we first invested in Silicon Motion, and we've invested ever since. We've increased our position at times when it was, when the valuation was really getting out of whack, and we've done very well. We originally invested when it was 18 and now it's 95. We've done very well over the years with Silicon Motion. We've reinvested at different price points. I don't actually recall when I first came across it, where I came across it in 2014. I must have seen someone writing something about it. It's probably what happened. It's the most likely source. I don't remember precisely, but we've been following it for a very long time. And this happens to be, I don't recall another time other than a few months ago when it was even cheaper. I don't know of another time that was such a good opportunity in Silicon Motion, in not only high growth and not only high profitability, but the risk is going away. The risk is simply diminishing. Usually you have a high growth, there's always a risk. You have the risk that there may be, you know, a lot of high growth companies aren't profitable now. The profits going to come in the future. Maybe the profits won't come and they often don't come. That's an issue with high growth companies. Or it's a high growth company, but it's not so clear the high growth will come. It looks like there'll be high growth, but it could be the market will zig instead of zag and you won't, the growth won't materialize. The growth here is already baked in. The design wins are in, the roadmaps are clear. Flash controller is definitely not diminishing. It's only increasing use in the world, and their market share has been gaining and their competitors are exiting the market. The low risk is so, I don't think there was ever a situation where Silicon Motion was in so much in the sweet spot of such low risk. And yet still, I mean, more than a reasonable PE for a company that's growing 70%, 40%, 50%, a PE of just 17 is really, really, I mean, insane. So I don't think there's ever been such a position. I've written to my investors about Silicon Motion over the years. And the first time I wrote to them an article just a few months ago in October, I wrote them pounding the table on Silicon Motion. I've never used that terminology on any other investment I've ever made.
Very interesting. Thank you. Could you elaborate on the management team here and their incentives, please?
So they're a long-term management team. They're pretty conservative in their guidance, but you listen to them. They're honest. They tell you what's happening. I think it's very useful to listen to or read transcripts of their conference calls. They give a lot of useful detail and color about what's happening in different parts of the business. They don't have huge visibility into volume in terms of the end markets. They can't tell you how many computers are going to be sold more than anybody else. and the customers, you know, shift the purchase orders depending on their needs at the moment. But they do have good visibility into their design wins, which are usually 1 to 2 to 3 years out, and the roadmaps that they're working on. So they have a very good idea of future growth, and just listen to them. They've been honest and conservative, and I have no problem with them. They are been shareholder friendly, both with dividends and share buybacks. The share buybacks have mostly been done at good times when the prices are low. You often find a lot of companies doing share buybacks at highs, and historically Silicon Motion has been doing share buybacks at lows. In fact, I wish they would have done more share buybacks over the years, I think they've been very shareholder friendly in their actions. Probably a little conservative, which I think is a cultural for the Taiwanese.
And in terms of capital allocation, is there anything you would prioritize differently than they're doing now?
Oh, no. I, as long as I'm not, you know, and trying to enter some other market that they don't have any foothold in, you know, if they wanted to take some of their extra money and enter some other technology, silicon development, I would look a lot of askance at that, but they don't, they're not doing that at all. They're, any investments they're making are in their controller market, just sticking to the knitting. They're putting money into the markets that they're ready large in, and they're trying to enter the other markets, enterprise SSD, Chinese hyperscale, and I think absolutely that they should be working on expanding more and more of the controller market to their offerings. I think they're doing a very good job with that.
Okay, terrific. Well, I will leave it there, Mordechai. Thank you so much.
I just want to say one more thing, if I can. You know, after I put the whole presentation together, I felt that there was a slide that was missing. Usually after presentation, I have one slide with risk factors. And it felt a little weird leaving it off, but honestly, I just don't see the risk factors here. I mean, if I had to have a slide, I would mention that China invades Taiwan, that wouldn't be good for their business. They're a Taiwanese company, it probably wouldn't be good for any business in Taiwan, and it wouldn't be good for the entire chip industry and computer industry as a whole, which is so much based in Taiwan, so many of the manufacturing facilities and much of the world. China invaded Taiwan, I guess that's a risk. I don't think that's a short-term risk. I don't think anybody's expecting that. But all the regular risks that you find in most businesses are really diminishing. And I'm just a little taken aback. I didn't have that much put on a risk factor page. I could only talk about the risks going away. So I thought that that really underscores the beauty of the opportunity here.
Yeah, well, thank you for touching on that. Anyway, that's very helpful now. And I would just encourage our members to feel free to follow up with their own thoughts or questions.
Yes, absolutely. You can email me, myavna@focuscapitaladvisors.com. It's on the first page of the presentation. Email me or reach out, call. I'm happy to talk.
Terrific. Thank you so much. Goodbye for now.
As well.